This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Julian Ng, as well as Sharit Abdullah. It is 6 o'clock on Tuesday, the 9th of July. We're one day into the working week, and how are we feeling this morning, guys?
Very good, very good. Thank you very much.
You say that with such enthusiasm, Julian.
Yes, I'm trying to wake myself up, actually.
I had my one cup of coffee, so yeah, it's starting out all right.
Is one cup of coffee
just
enough
one
for you, though?
No,
it's certainly not for me.
You've convinced me otherwise.
No.
So I'll have to then.
I've said that with a resounding no. Getting on to my third cup.
Julian and I are the caffeine evangelists in the Morning Run.
I'm just an addict.
I get shaky if I get too much anyway.
At least you know, Julian. But of course, we have lots of fascinating discussions for you this morning to help keep you awake, as Julian would say. So what are we going to be talking about?
Well, the world is getting to be a more dangerous place, not least because of deepfakes, which is the ability to cut and paste certain people's face onto videos and making them say or do things that they normally wouldn't do. So we'll be talking a little bit about that.
And also, what's been on the headline is corporal punishment. I think a lot of people have been talking about that. And so the question is, how do you discipline your kids? We'll talk about whether the rotan is still relevant in today's age of disciplining a child.
And we're also going to be talking about why women don't get paid as much as men in sports. Now, if you want to weigh in on those conversations, you can always WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Do let us know what you think, because we'll take a look at social media throughout the morning, and we'll be back with more fascinating discussions. But first, Slow Show by The National, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Julian and Sharit. That was The Tide is High by Blondie. And this morning, we're asking the question of why are women paid less in the sporting industry? Now, gender gaps are something that I think the population as a whole across the world have been struggling to close when it comes to the workforce, but it's still very prevalent in sports. And we've seen this discussion come up time and time again, and in particular, most recently, with the Women's World Cup in football.
That's right. So for the prize money, they won $4 million in comparison. So that's double to what they to the prize money that they won in the last World Cup. So, I mean, that's one thing. So we have seen a doubling in the, prize money for this mm-hmm. tournament. And I think if we look at the stats as well, there has been over the course of several World Cups, it has been, increasing in more than double, actually. And another thing to consider about this tournament is that it just started back in 1991. So it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, I think the prize money has gone up about five times over the last four World Cups. And it's still, men still outpays women prize money by mm-hmm. about 10 times. So it's unfair. I think it's definitely unfair. I don't know whether it's got to do with the commercial realities where the matches are more well attended on the mm-hmm. men's side. I don't know. I'm just speculating here. But if it is, I'm not sure what can be done about it.
Yeah, I think obviously the Men's World Cup has a much longer history than the Women's World Cup, because as you pointed out, Sharit, the Women's World Cup has only been running since about the 90s.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest disparity here is how you see, is when you look into the individual countries themselves and you see how the national football federations pay the women's teams compared to the men's teams. This is particularly visible when you look at U.S. football, because in the U.S., the men's team, I think the closest they've ever finished to the title is they placed third in something like 1930, and recently I think it was in 2000, and it was the early 2000s that they made it to the quarterfinals, and that's the furthest they've ever gotten in the Men's World Cup. But the women's team in the U.S., they are three-time World Cup champions, so they have won it again this time around in France. So that's the competition that's just finished, and they get paid almost, I think, about 10% of what the men get
correct,
paid.
Correct.
So this is why they are currently bringing a suit against their National Football Federation, because they've been alleging they've made complaints before and nothing has been done. So they were given the right to sue this year.
I guess one of the problems that exacerbates it is the fact that not not all the money goes to the players. It goes to the federation, which supposedly develops football or soccer, as they call it.
Yeah, and the federation is the one that is responsible for distributing that prize money to the men and women's
teams. It's all the more glaring for the women because after taking the cut and you compare that with what the men take home, it will be a lot less, right? Because the men is going to like get 10 times more than the women.
So I think there is something there with regards to the revenue collected with each tournament, especially even... when we look at it at a national level, when we compare men and women's tournament within the country as well. Now, for some reason, at the moment, we do see a lot more crowd watching the men's football. So the question is, who's responsible for that? Is it more of, is it culture or is it the organizer themselves? Have they not been promoting the sports well enough, especially when you have a team like American football team, women's American football team who has won the World Cup? Don't they sort of deserve that attention, you know, with at least within locally? And compare US with other countries that have managed to at least introduce equal pay. We're talking about New Zealand and Norway. But culturally, if you look at New Zealand, they were the first country to have a woman vote. So I think that sort of sets a tone in terms of how they perceive the role of a woman in the country.
Yeah, I think just generally, if you look at the wider landscape of women in sport, women's participation in sport has come much later than men, you know, for a variety of reasons. For example, in the US, marathon running, right? I think the first official entrant to win, the first female official entrant to win the Boston Marathon or to finish the Boston Marathon was in the 1960s, because before that, long distance running was believed to be detrimental to women's health and femininity, okay, which I think is frankly quite ridiculous.
They got to go back to like the cave women days where, you know, the women ran as fast, if not faster than the men, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that. Again, I'm speculating, no research there.
I know, but it's basically, it illustrates this idea, this very patriarchal ideas of what is good for women and how this has really impacted women's participation in sports. Because you can turn this argument onto almost every industry. You know, why aren't there more women in engineering? Why aren't there more women in business? For me, it is a good portion of it is culture, as you mentioned, Sharitz, but it's also the organizations. It is very much a chicken and egg situation, because if the cultures don't change, the organizations are not going to change to reflect that. So while we still have this idea that, okay, women's sports are not going to generate as much interest as men's, then these organizations are not going to spend the money because they don't think they're going to get the return on their investment. So then these sports like the Women's World Cup won't get as much attention, chief just by virtue of the fact that they maybe aren't promoted as much as the men's.
Yeah, I think that it also exists in other sports as well. But, Lynn, when you talk about culture, I'm just wondering if you can legislate such things, because culture takes a long time to change, right? But when you say that this is going to be discriminatory and you can get jail time if you practice, pay discrimination, whether in sports or in the corporate sector, then perhaps that could nudge people in the right direction.
Hopefully. So from your ears to the ears of the government, Julian. Okay, now we're coming up on a couple of messages and then we'll be back with more fascinating discussions for you. Remember, if you want to let us know what you think, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back with more, so be sure to keep it here on The Morning Run at BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Can't Change Me by Chris Cornell, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Julian and Sharitz. Now, more and more we are having to second guess what we see on the internet, from fake news to pictures that have been doctored in Photoshop, and now even to videos. So the advent of deepfake, which is essentially a technology that allows you to superimpose someone's face onto another video and essentially make them say things that they perhaps never said before. And this is something that's been highlighted in The Atlantic as something we need to watch out for, particularly when it comes in the run-up to the 2020 US presidential elections. And frankly, it's rather scary, guys, because, you know, it's so difficult even now to be combating fake news and these fake images that we even now have to worry about the videos that we might see as well.
Yeah, I think I guess closer to home, mm-hmm. There is that discussion about whether some of the videos that were passed around of our alleged leaders that would have destroyed the career, if it is indeed fake, would have destroyed the career of the said leader. It's very dangerous.
Absolutely. I know. So this is really unfortunate, isn't it, that when this technology is being abused. Because I initially think that there are some, it's an exciting technology, especially when you think about how, well, at least as a parent myself, how it could sort of change my communication with my kids, especially for an example, take Elmo. I mean, if I need to, I can't convince my kid to stop picking their nose and eating their booger. You know, those kind of situation where
if I don't think deep fake okay. would help.
Well,
with that.
Well, not if Elmo were to
That's
say
deep
it.
Deep real, I think.
If I could get Elmo to say things like that for me, I think things could the situation could change.
I think there would be a deeper problem there, Sharit, maybe with regard to the communication with your children. But yeah, I don't know, because we're having such trouble just promoting media literacy amongst the populations now. That how do you identify whether or not something is deepfake, right? Because as we saw, I think with the situation that you mentioned, Julian, with these videos flying around, it takes experts to identify whether or not something has been doctored, and that's not that is not necessarily a resource that would be available to the general public. So you would really have no way to identify whether or not something that a candidate you're watching, for example, a presidential candidate say, whether or not that something is true or not.
Well, this is where I think big tech will have to have some degree of self-regulation, because the likes of Google and Facebook and Amazon, I think, would be able to come up with some technology that will always be maybe free, like how we're using Google Docs and Google Sheets right now. It's free for you. Google can very easily have the technology right on your browser to tell you whether something is real or fake. I don't know. I think technology would be able to catch up with that.
Yeah, I won't deny that. And I think self-regulation is the direction to go at the end of the day. And I think taking my example again is expose them early. Because at the end of the day, all this technology has a tell. There must be something that you can tell, you can differentiate between what's real and what's not. And the earlier you get exposed to it and then you get educated about it, the better, the way you could manage it. Really.
But then again, as we're seeing with fake news, right, the general problem, the problem segment of the population tends not to be the young people, especially when it comes to fake news, because the people that have the most difficulty identifying fake news now are those generally in the brackets of ages 55 and above, because that's certainly the demographic of the people who send me fake news on WhatsApp. You know, it's all these aunties and uncles who, all in best interest, they have no idea that what they're sending is actually untrue. So these are the people that would probably benefit the most from the situation that you described, Julian. Big tech actually regulating itself.
I don't know whether this would make us as a society become better, because we're so aware of the existence of fake news, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a nuclear arms race. Everybody has it, so nobody destroys the world with it. I don't know. Something good might come out of this.
All right, well, let us know what you think. Do you trust what you see on the internet? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up on the 6:30 news, and to take you there is Haim with The Wire, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Sharit Abdullah. Now, spare the rod, spoil the child, and that's something that I've heard, I'm pretty sure you have too, and it's not surprising, because 80% of Malaysian parents have said they use a corporal punishment on their kids, and some believe that it should even be allowed in schools. And this was a survey by international agency YouGov, and I find myself unsurprised considering the prevalence of tiger parents in Asia as a whole. But for me, the interesting statistic here was that so many should believe that it should be allowed in schools, that teachers should be allowed to use corporal punishment on children. There was a statistic, a breakdown of when, in what situations they believe these would be necessary. 63% said stealing, it would be necessary in cases of stealing, 54% in bullying, and 51% in violence. But, you know, the rotan is kind of a bit of a hot button topic. And how do you guys feel about this?
I'm really surprised by that particular statistic. That's overwhelming in support of the cane. I disagree with that. I don't think that this should be used too sparingly on children, because we have come to a stage where the development in child disciplining or child raising techniques have come to a level where you don't have to do that, right? You can talk to the children, and we don't know which child is more vulnerable.
But what if children don't listen to you, Julian?
Well, then maybe it has got the conversation has to change, I think, because maybe it has something to do with the parenting style. I don't know. I can't laud it over parents. I can't pontificate here because I'm not a parent myself.
Yeah.
But I've been a child before. And I totally oppose caning.
Of course, we all did. I came from a military school, so the whole idea of corporal punishment is not alien to me. And it does shape you in some ways. It does mold you in some ways. It does sort of restrict who you are as a person in a lot of ways. But what's surprising is the statistics on which type of sort of punishment, which is necessary in different cases, like stealing. How stealing is, people find that physical punishment is more appropriate for stealing. But when it comes, I think I get where you're coming from, Julian. I think in today's age, there is that line sometimes where circumstances do require. You need to assess the situation. Mm. But the bottom line is that whether or not teachers today are equipped with the right sort of tools to sort of engage with children. I think in my experience, especially, I notice some Malay teachers, because of our feudalistic sort of culture, that engagement or dialogue is totally off the books. Mm. So, you know, physical corporal punishment is like the easy and fast way to resolve situation.
And I can imagine, especially in cases where you have one teacher to maybe a class of 50 students, that it would be even more, it's just physically impossible for you to engage all of those students in the short amount of time that you're allotted, right? So I'm also not in favor of using the cane on children, right? Because I believe that there are other ways that you can use to talk to them, you know, and because I feel that corporal punishment does eventually alienate them. But again, in a similar situation to Julian, I'm not a parent, so I really can't say. At the end of the day, though, I am unsurprised by the statistic because it reflects, I think it reflects the culture of our society as a whole. We tend to focus more on punishment rather than rehabilitation because we see this in our prison systems. We see this in our prison systems as well. You know, we put people in prison to punish them, we don't use prisons as a system to rehabilitate them and to focus on molding on why did they, you know, go, why did they become wayward?
They're still using the rotan for certain crimes, right?
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous.
And so
a huge rotan, by the way.
Yeah, and I think that this does trickle down into the rest of our society. So therefore, you know, am I really surprised that we're still talking about this, talking about the rotan being used on school children? Not really. I do feel like this will just perpetuate itself, though, because this is, you know, there has been research to suggest that children who have been caned are much more likely to use that cane, use a cane on their children themselves. So at the end of the day, I feel like if we learn about this, we should stop this cycle before it can perpetuate itself.
I know we can say that times have changed and we learn, right? As time goes by, we learn more. But in the 70s, I think the teachers in school, for example, were meting out corporal punishments like monsters, you know. And today we've diagnosed certain mental health issues like dyslexia and ADHD and things like that, right? A lot of these children need help. And unfortunately, the caning or corporal punishment is used like the screen, right, of devices to shut children up. For example, you go to restaurants, and the only way to shut the children up is to use an iPad or something, a screen. Yeah. Again, not pontificating here, but this is really all for the parents, not necessarily for the nurturing of the child. You know, I think that YouGov would, it'd be very interesting statistic if YouGov actually surveyed the children. So, do you agree with corporal punishment, and what's your reason, right?
So the next generation, that's what the outcome would be. So as we mentioned, that back in the day when we were for corporal, well, when the corporal punishment was prevalent, a lot of us were some expressing what that has done to them. And also, I think in the next generation, we will see what so all these gadgets has probably done to the next group of society, really.
Well, let us know, what do you think? Do you agree with corporal punishment? Is it necessary? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back with more discussions for you in just a little while, so be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Earth, Wind and Fire with September. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Sharitz Abdullah. Thank you so much for your messages this morning. We've had a couple of tweets and WhatsApps. We've discussed women in sports. We've discussed sparing the rod and spoiling the child, as well as fake news. And so far, Chiang Chin Wang has tweeted in to say, most who are against this, so this being corporal punishment, have never had a child. And in this case, it would be true, very true, of
true.
Julian and I.
Two-thirds.
Yes. But actually...
Three-thirds of this... four-thirds. Three-quarters. Three-quarters of this studio, including the producer, except for you, Sharitz. You have children.
I do.
Yes, but actually, Sharitz, because you've said that you used to be on the side of corporal punishment, right? So what
It started
changed?
Off that way. I mean, so being a first-time parent, I think when I first came across my child misbehaving, I did not know what to do after saying it nicely, and then still they could continue doing so. And then I did go down that unfortunate path for a while. But what I notice is that I tend to sort of, they tend to get distant after that situation. And I think ultimately I did not want to lose that line of communication with them, because I think that's important, being able to communicate and tell them. So I didn't end up hitting them. I hit everything else besides them. I just hit myself. I hit the table. I hit everything else.
That's interesting. Very creative parenting. We got this interesting one from Paul Savary. He said that all is goal. Time change, people change, but discipline is discipline. And he says, look at the crime rate and moral values, suggesting that the crime rate is high in Malaysia and the moral values low. Now, one example that we can take for this is the decriminalizing of drug using in Malaysia, right? We recently decriminalized that. And this is a fine example of the development of our learnings and of our state of mind, right? What happened to all those people who used to use drugs? Did they suddenly not become criminals? Because right now they're not, right? Yeah. Because you changed the laws. And a crime is how you define it. We make up these crimes, right?
Yeah,
I think it's just like so moral values that Paul has put forward. How do you measure a moral value? Because these are things that are dictated by society at large. In a large extent, laws too, because laws are created through our parliament and who are representatives of society. So they reflect the general belief system that is perpetuated through the Legislative Council. And I feel like at the end of the day, people do change, and the ways of it, I don't necessarily agree that discipline is still discipline, and these methods, you know, will not necessarily change. Because I feel like as understanding grows, we can find better ways to talk to children, or to perhaps in you know, on a larger scale, to deal with people who may have committed crimes, but not necessarily through actual criminal behaviors. Perhaps it was through, you know, just social issues that have over time built up, and then they found themselves committing crimes. And these are the people that can be rehabilitated and reintroduced to society as contributing members of society that we would not have been able to benefit from under previous regimes.
Yeah, and I think we've started to recognize, for an example, what poverty does to an individual. I mean, it pushes you into...
Absolutely.
So, I mean, we're becoming more empathetic with a person's background as a situation. Now, with a lot of awareness with regards to mental illness and so forth, all that you know, paints a lot, it gives a lot of explanation as to why a person behaves in such a way. I mean, I can imagine how, say, for an example, how an autistic child were to have been treated 30, 40 years ago or 50 years ago in comparison to how we would treat an autistic child today.
So Jerry also has WhatsApped in to say, have women run the associations? No men. I think he was referring to our discussion about women in sports. And actually, I do tend to agree with this. Not necessarily don't have any men on the association whatsoever, but just have more representation, right? Because this is a problem. This is a problem across many industries, that we don't have enough women in positions of power. And when you have women in positions of power, then they can also put forward different perspectives. It's just that diversity of opinions that you're really after, because when you have all the same kinds of people in a room, you do wind up with an echo chamber.
I mean, again, this is something that can be legislated, right? Mm-hmm. If you're talking about moral values of society and crime rates, you know, just legislate that sexual discrimination is illegal in the same way that race discrimination is illegal, in the same way that monopolies are illegal. I mean, it's something that you can legislate.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your messages this morning. We've had quite a lot of tweets and WhatsApps, but we can't take a look at all of them because we're heading into the 7 o'clock news. And after that, we'll be heading into the business end of the morning run. So be sure to stay tuned for that. And here's Stevie Wonder to take you there with I Was Made to Love Her, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.